This is Energy Out Loud, the podcast for energy professionals and people who want to be part of one of the most purpose-driven industries. In this podcast, you will get insights from industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators who are shaping the future of energy. I'm your host, Morten Dahlum. I'm from Norlys Energy Trading, a data-driven trading and renewable asset management house. So plug in, turn up the volume, and let's get started. Sector coupling, is that the silver bullet to solve the energy challenge? That's a question my co-host Anders Bord and myself have invited Søren from Triangle Energy Alliance to answer. Søren, welcome to Energy Out Loud.
Thank you so much.
Both Anders and myself, we've really been looking forward to have this conversation with you today about the sector coupling. And before we jump into that conversation, we need to learn a little bit about you and your background.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Well, starting with my background, I'm originally actually educated as a forester, which may sound a bit strange when we're in the energy sector. But when it comes on to an end, we all need some carbon for our future fuels, etc. So having a forestry background, this is actually pretty much an advantage for the time being. Then afterwards, I've been practicing as an advisor in the environmental field. And then I've been, as I work with the Danish District Heating Association, and then afterwards, I went into the natural gas sector, working with Nature Energy, one of the largest producers of biomethane based in Denmark. Spent a short while in the power sector. And then afterwards, I worked 2.5 years with some municipalities doing strategic energy planning.
Okay. So what is the passion here? Because it sounds like you've been in the industry for a long time. What is the passion here? What is driving you when you get up in the morning? Ooh,
the passion is that what we're about to do here is that we are developing the what comes after the fossil engine that is has been driven this whole society globally during the last plus 100 years. And so we're designing it now. We're finding out how can we make a sustainable energy system. And if we want to do that, we need to use a lot of sector coupling.
Okay. I think many of us working in the industry can actually acknowledge what you're saying, that that's what drives the agenda. And that leads me to our co-host today, Anders. Welcome on board.
Thank you, Morten.
Your background, where are you coming from?
Yes, so I'm working here at Energy Trading, same as you, Morten. And I have a background in software way back when. I've been in the industry for the past 12 years, give or take. And I've been working also with district heating for many years, most of my career. And I think that that's where sector coupling really originated in Denmark, and which positions us to be good at this new business area. What I'm doing today, I'm sitting at NET with the responsibility for as head of asset operations. Meaning an asset, anything from a wind turbine, solar panels, batteries, and so on and so forth. And my focus is on establishing all these future energy technologies that we're heading into, as Søren said, and figuring out how do we actually operate this? How do we make this happen in the real world?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you've both mentioned this district heating concept, and for people outside of Denmark, haven't necessarily heard about this. Anders, maybe you can put a few words. What is district heating all about?
Well, I think it's really important to mention district heating in the Danish model. It's been here for many years. And the idea is that in Denmark, we have district heating. So we have heat pipes in the ground, many places. I think we have above more than 60,000 kilometers of district heating in the small country of Denmark. And what we're doing is that we actually couple the production of power and the production of heat in things like gas turbines, coal, steam turbines, and so on. We've been doing that for quite some years. So the excess heat of producing power, which has always been there in fossil fuels, has been utilized in order to heat homes in Denmark. And that's kind of where district heating comes in.
So, Søren, is this mainly a Danish thing? I know that we've both been working on exporting technology here. That's actually how we met. So is this something that is mainly a Danish thing?
Well, no, not at all. There are plenty of larger cities around the world that has different sizes of district heating systems using combined heat and power mostly. But the scale of it as a society is quite unique in Denmark and Sweden, etc. So like in the Scandinavia and some other countries, the district heating ratio is quite high. I believe in Denmark we have crossed 70% of the heating demand for dwellings.
Yeah. Okay. And this obviously leads very, very good into our the theme of today, because we're here to talk about sector coupling. So Søren, can you maybe share a little bit about what is that all about, and what is the thinking behind the sector coupling? If you can put some words on that.
Yeah, I can do that. Maybe I should start with just introducing a short thing about the Powertrex partnership that I represent here in the Triangle area, because this partnership is consisting of 7 municipalities, the local region of southern Denmark, and so far 25 commercial companies or utilities, and a few educational institutions. And all those partners, both public and private partners, have joined this partnership in the understanding that none of us can do this alone. So we need to couple up with new partners. We need to build new value chains. And like I described before, somehow we are about to design the new energy engine that is going to drive the future society, and also the energy that drives the engine. So it's both the engine and the energy that we need to do. And that we used to have fossil fuels that could deliver on this on many different purposes, anything between flying an airplane across the Atlantic or heating up our houses with natural gas, etc. But when we want to do that in a sustainable way, we need to have a lot of green power, but we also need to have as a stepping stone on hydrogen. If you want to produce hydrogen, you need a lot of water. So also there, when you're building up this Powertrex value chain, you need some water. And to do the really difficult part of all this, if you want to produce fuels and plastic and other polymers, you'll need carbon, lots of sustainable biogenic carbon. So we need to, so we're looking into this future energy system. You want to take it as a whole, and not just starting by the simple things like electrifying the way we drive our normal cars and trucks, etc. But you want to do the really hard part of the green transition. You need to get in some biogenic carbon. That's where it gets really tricky and really complex.
Interesting. So and a great introduction with that. And I'm sure we will link to all of these things so people can come in and see more about you. So this thing about sector coupling, can you share a little bit about that? Can you introduce the subject here for us?
Well, I could take an example where starting over where Anders started. He mentioned the idea about the district heating, where you start up with a power plant that originally simply saying just produce some power, and you simply cooled the surplus heat away into the seawater, etc., in the air. And back in the 80s, we broadly in Denmark changed that to combined heat and power production. So we, in general, not all everywhere, but lots of places, we simply started to make use of the surplus heat from the power production, like Anna said. And when I look into this future engine of our society, where we need a lot of carbon, so if you have a combustion process that includes like biomass or even fossil fuels, etc., the carbon dioxide from the combustion process, it's a waste incineration plants or combined heat and power based on straw or biomass, etc., we'll need to pick up that carbon dioxide. So we'll develop the combined heat and power plant into a combined heat power carbon plant. And it's not because we want to save those assets, but because we need to balance our energy system. We also need to be able to produce electricity when the sun is not shining and the wind is not blowing. And there we have biomass as one of the only renewable energy sources that we can actually decide ourselves when to make use of, similar to burn when we need the heat and power. So there's some kind of development process that we are is looking into now.
Any views here, Anders?
Well, I think I agree with Søren, but I think also it that's just one example of sector coupling, right? There's so many that are coming in, and I think Søren raised the one thing that there's the issue of carbon, right? And I actually think that when we look back in 30 years or something like that from on this, the scarce resource will actually be carbon in all of this, because I mean, right now we see biogas popping up and being constructed, and we see methane coming out of it and CO2 coming out of it. But we need to utilize that CO2, and we need to utilize it to combine it with, for instance, hydrogen to make more methane or methanol. And we need to look at all the sectors. We can't place a wind turbine on top of a plane, right? That's not going to work. So how do we combine all these commodities, and how do we look at all the sectors? Because we have a tendency to hear energy, and when we hear energy, we're thinking power, right? And energy is so much more than just electricity.
Yeah. So you say that there are other opportunities or other possibilities about the sector. Where could that be, and what do we see today from where we sit on us?
Well, I think it's still in its young years, but we are seeing these ideas pop up everywhere. Right now, most people are just talking about batteries, but I think that we'll see much more where we are combining existing industries that have new requirements on the green transition, and figuring out what's their part in the sector coupling in order to let's say achieve synergies that can actually make us competitive on all of this.
Yeah. Søren, any views?
Yes, definitely. I agree with Anders. There are so many places where we need to look into sector coupling, and we could also talk having an integrated energy system as a whole. If you look into the power to X value chain, the first really large stepping stone will be the production of green hydrogen from green power. And in order to produce the magnitude of hydrogen that we need when we want to substitute the fossil fuels, we'll need gigawatt sites on the hydrogen production capacity. And for each gigawatt of electrolyzers, you'll need somewhere between 2 and 2.5 million cubic meter of water to supply to the electrolyzer. So once you then do the hydrogen production, you will have both hydrogen but also a lot of clean oxygen. So we have here another value, another resource stream that we need to put into some kind of value stream. It could be for oxy-fuel processes, it could be for mineralization processes, but we need to develop that further. So sector coupling is closely combined with what I see as an integrated energy system. So we have to use all those resource streams in an efficient way in order to keep up the overall energy efficiency on the system as a whole.
Is this something everybody working in the industry recognizes, that this is what we really need to do to solve this, the challenge we have in front of us, or we are in the middle of?
It's getting better, I would say. But I think we also need, for the normal public, people need to materialize this. We need to showcase what this really means. Hen Fredericia in the Triangle area has a very concrete example of that, because one of our partners, Everfuel, have teamed up with the local refinery, Crossbridge Energy, and they have established a 20-megawatt hydrogen production facility. And by that, they'll produce about 8 tons of clean green hydrogen per day. Most of it will be used at the refinery on the short run. On the longer run, we'll have to need that half of that hydrogen they'll produce for green transportation. But we also make use of the surplus heat from the electrolyzers, which seen from a district heating point of view is quite valuable. So like the thermal quality of the surplus heat from the electrolyzers is pretty good compared to, for example, hyperscale data centers, which have a temperature around 30 degrees Celsius. Then you have a lot of the primary surplus heat from an electrolyzer being around 75 degrees Celsius. So we're a lot closer to the temperature level that you need for district heating distribution system, maybe not for transmission purposes, but for normal distribution purposes, the hydrogen production is quite interesting. And let alone from the 20 megawatt production facility. Once it's in full operation, it'll supply something like 28,000 megawatt hours of district heating for the Twiis grid.
I think right now what we're seeing in the world is that everyone's kind of waiting for each other, right? And we need some movement, especially from governments, to enable this, because I think what we need right now is a lot of first movers. That I think a lot of people are thinking about the good ideas of the synergies, but I think that a lot of people are also looking at them and thinking, this might be a good case, but if I'm a first mover, I'm going to improve the technologies. Someone's going to come after me and be more competitive, right? So if I do the first mover part, then I'll be out of the money, right? So it's kind of a catch-up effect, I think, that we're in front of right now. And the other part that I think is really important is to consider the scale of this, to not just be, you know, a sprinkle in the water, right? I think I read somewhere that if we're doing hydrogen production across Europe, we needed something like 136,000 megawatts of installed capacity if we expect to produce hydrogen based on the ebbs and flows of wind and solar production, right? So there's going to be a lot of improvements before we have that scale, and the first movers are going to have a hard time keeping up. I think that's one of the blockers that we have right now.
Yeah. Søren, are you first movers at TEA?
Well, TEA's not, because we're basically just a structure who's set into this world, yeah, to help our partners to succeed. So we do not have our own projects, but our partners have some very interesting projects. And yes, definitely Everfuel is indeed a first mover in the collaboration with the Crossbridge Refinery. And this is something that is what we see many places. We call it here the hen and egg issue. Who want to put up hydrogen filling stations for the trucks and cars if there are no trucks and cars available in the market to use that hydrogen? But here in Valencia, because the refinery already uses 35 tons of hydrogen as per today, which in the normal production before Everfuel started up was a fossil production of hydrogen from steam methane reformation. So there you can implement the hydrogen directly into the refinery processes in the existing value chain in the refinery. And after that, they'll go along and produce some completely green production lines, making completely green products. But for the time being, we're doing what they call co-processing. We're starting to introduce green hydrogen into the refinery process, and we're also starting to introduce green carbon feedstocks. So we're gradually moving in and exchanging the fossil carbon with the biogenic sustainable carbon.
So what I hear you say is that you're building demand and supply at the same time, really, and that way we can't scale one before we have the other. So it really needs to go hand in hand.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, and I think we're seeing it in society in Denmark right now as well. Energinet is trying to get some commitment to make a hydrogen infrastructure, right? Backbone West. And what they're saying is this is a very, very expensive project, so we need some commitment from asset owners. And all the asset owners are saying, we'll build it as soon as we have the infrastructure, right? And that's where we're back at the hen and the egg. And I think what's happening right now is we're starting to see people solve it locally, meaning that we're building small-scale proof of concept assets and sites that can kind of convert between these commodities. So producing hydrogen, yes, but as long as there's not a hydrogen infrastructure or offtake, then using that hydrogen to do something else, for instance, combining it with biogas to make some fuels could be a way to get to a point where we can actually get above or beyond this hen and egg problem.
Yeah. So what is actually the potential of this sector coupling when we talk about it? It sounds like it. There's a lot of opportunities in here. But do you have any bets on how far can we take this?
Well, we did a little of calculation in the Triangle area, and we asked one of our advisory services in our partnership to carve out what's the actual use of fossil resources in Denmark as per 2021. And the result of that was that we, as a nation, use every year around an amount of carbon close to 33 million tons of carbon dioxide. If all the carbon was on the form of carbon dioxide, it would be like 33 million tons of carbon dioxide that all embedded in the fossil resources that we make use of for all kinds of purposes, not only fuels, but also for plastic, for furniture, for building purposes and all that stuff. So if we want to make a sustainable energy system, we won't be able to spend that much, because we also need to be a lot more efficient in the future. So we don't need to mobilize the same amount in the future, but we'll need a lot of carbon. So we also did some research on what's our ability to produce carbon for Denmark as a society, as a whole, when you have agriculture and you have forestry. And our ability is that, when you look into the way the agricultural and forestry system work today, we'll be able to supply something around 10 to 12 million tons of carbon, being in the form of carbon dioxide. That was the aim of that, which is like only a third of it. So that there's carbon as a scarce resource will be an issue very shortly, once we start to realize that what we're fully dependent on from fossil resources, if we want to abandon that within the next 20 years, we need to be better in using photosynthesis from agriculture and forestry, simply to mobilize carbon from the atmosphere into our energy system and into our production to produce green plastic, etc. So that's a way to picture the potential of this. So it's actually rather big, and also embedded in those fossil resources that we make use of in Denmark every year is the amount of 1.6 million tons of hydrogen.
Big numbers here. Anders, any perspective?
I think I'll take an example from the old world where Søren and I came from, district heating, right? So when we had power stations, we would look at efficiency factors around, let's say, 40%, give or take. So putting in coal or natural gas or something like that, 1 megawatt would give you an output of 0.4, right? Then we added district heating and we went up to close to 100%, right? So 1 megawatt in, 1 megawatt out, right? Or megawatt hour. And I think that's what this is all about, right? Getting that much energy out. I think the hard part right now is that everyone's in explore mode, right? Everyone's trying to find that silver bullet, and the silver bullet is a number of things in combination. And then I think what needs to go on top is standardization, right? Because what I'm seeing right now, mentioning before that I had a background in software, is that it's just a big an asset to optimize and operate these things in unison. That's just a big active as the asset itself, right? And we can't spend millions on every customized solution that we make on a world level. We need to have building blocks so that we can standardize, so that we can optimize this better, operate it better, have more stable production that we can rely on. I think sector coupling is also about being dependent on each other, right? It doesn't help that if Søren has an asset that needs hydrogen, that he needs to build his own electrolyzer in case my electrolyzer doesn't deliver, right? There's no synergy if everyone needs a backup of a backup, right? So we need those standardizations, and then we need to figure out how do we actually engage as companies with each other so that we can have that trust, so that my production line, even though it's dependent on Søren's production line, actually works.
Søren, I'm sure I can see that you are nodding. I'm sure you've got yeah. also an
yeah. Maybe it would be good for discussion if I was in a position to Anders, but I'm not. I mean, taking the example again here from Fredericia, we have the company Everfuel and the refinery Crossbridge working closer together. What we see here is actually a strategic partnership between those two companies. They're each interdependent on each other, on their strategic goals. Okay, so that needs a lot of trust. You need to build up trust and you need to solve problems together. So we usually say around here that the last thing you do if you have a problem, that a problem arises in the development process of bringing up new technologies, the last thing you do is you call the lawyers. That's the last thing you ever do. You don't start to look at the contracts and find out who's going to pay for this. You look into, you sit down and you find out how do we solve this? Because you won't be able to break new ground and develop these and to scale up these new technologies if you start by asking the lawyer.
So what I hear both of you say is that it's probably not all the solutions will not come from the market. They will not come from the technology. They would actually come from partnerships. Is that right?
I think that's a really important point. I mean, that maybe that's why we're ahead in some to some extent in Denmark, because we're very trusting people, right? But I completely agree. If you start going down the lane of lawyers getting to an agreement, then you'll see years, if ever, that those contracts come together. I think some of the you said strategic partnerships. I've seen examples where you actually go into business together, right? So rather than making a contract between two partners, you actually make a company together, and then you decide who owns how big of a percentage. But every dime that's earned in the company, that's then going into that company, and then we spread it out. Because if we start having our own agendas, then they'll start being contradictory to each other, and then we'll do suboptimal operations.
Yeah, but in that field, you also see some of the barriers in this making this enabling to produce these new value chains. Because if you have one large global company that have all those competencies within their own business, they may have four or five sub business cases within the same company. But in total, it balances, and you have the correct rate of return that is needed by the board of directors in order to say go. If you have five divided companies, individual companies, and they have their own individual business case, then you have a problem to establish the full value chain if just one of those business cases is not profitable enough. So in this partnership, you also have, you would say, like a financial weakness that you need to be able to mediate those risks. You need to handle the sum, the total profitability, if you want to move forward along. And there's another thing about that is that you have a lot of decision processes that goes across company borders, so to speak. You have to be very aligned on how to develop those decision gates when you have an interdependent value chain.
So now you both say that this is an opportunity or maybe easier for us in Denmark because we are trusted, we have a trusted culture. But if we take a look outside of Denmark, what should drive this agenda then?
What should drive the agenda of green transition? I think that's easy.
No, save the planet. Partnerships. That's what I mean. With what should actually establish the foundation for it? If we say that you're coming from a different way of doing business.
Well, I there's a number of ways, right? There's the way that Søren is explaining, right? You could have a big company that has all the competencies and all the money, right? To just go and do it if they believe in it. But then you have the problem of going together with the utility companies, right, for infrastructure. I think there's the possibility of the partnerships between companies, if we're talking like small, medium scale companies, where you can help each other. And I think the hard part there is avoiding the lawyers getting too much power.
Yep.
And then I think there's the last way, which is probably the most common or viable way, and that is to get our governments in play, to get the incentives to move this forward, to get above this this hen and egg situation, right? And that's going to require some subsidiaries or tariff reductions or whatever it may be in order to make those business cases make sense, right? we've seen that lots of times when we need to transition something, that we make a temporary subsidiary that'll help get things started. And I think that's probably one of the most important ones. The question is, when companies, not companies, countries get enough motivation for it. I'm thinking of a case right now that I was working with some known people in Germany, and I was talking to them about green transition. And as you know, that there's a lot of green transition in Germany. Wind and solar is popping up everywhere. I think they have 160 gigawatts or something like that installed capacity. But when you talk to them and say, well, you know, what about all the second half of the green transition, right, where we need to remove the fossil fuels and get all the flexibility in there and have an energy grid that works when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. And the response to that was, well, there's going to be coal in Germany for many years, right?
Yeah.
And at some point, that argument doesn't work anymore. And then we'll start seeing things happen. And I think the governments are the ones that needs to get going on that one.
Any perspective, Sean?
Well, yes, I believe that one of the really strong arguments about strategic partnerships and call it sector coupling or whatever between different companies, if you have, is actually economic synergies. Because once you start to investigate the business case on that, you probably see lots of places where and a more optimal way to use your common resources will give you a better business case. And again, a concrete example from Infilati here, when you sell some of the surplus heat from the electrolyzers, you get some paying from the district heating company. Okay, so you have some payoff on that. But besides that, and that's the small synergy, the large synergy is that it gives you more operational hours on your electrolyzer. Okay. So the sum of value created by doing this in combination and making to sell the surplus heat also improves the bottom line for the hydrogen producing company. So economic synergies between each other when you do sector coupling, I believe is a very strong driver, but it takes some while, it takes some energy, so to speak, to find out and to investigate your business case to find those economic synergies.
Okay, Søren, we are kind of ending or nearing a closing of this podcast. Anders mentioned before this ketchup effect, that things suddenly, or the ball will start rolling, or the ketchup will come. Are we there yet, or are we far away from that? What can you see where from your position?
Oh yeah, they're two very interesting perspectives, and it all comes down to the hydrogen. Because if you want to scale up hydrogen production, and it's like hundreds of megawatt capacities in different geographies, if you want to do that, you need the hydrogen infrastructure. You need to have the pipelines where you compress the hydrogen and you can export it in a pipeline instead of by 400 kilovolt in the power grid. So you want to have that infrastructure simply because hydrogen takes up too much space. And if you want to move it by truck, you can more or less you can move around 1 ton of hydrogen on a truck, where you can normally move like 35 to 40 tons of load. You can only move 1 ton of hydrogen at around 700 bars. So that's the main driver. And once you have that, we'll have, I believe in Denmark, we'll see a lot of final investment decisions on large scale gigawatt plants. We have both the H-Synergy in Esbjerg. They have one gigawatt of production facility very close to, but they're dependent on the infrastructure. So no infrastructure, no final investment decision. So whenever you want to scale up for more than just minor projects, minor meaning somewhere between 30 and 50 megawatt hydrogen production capacity locally, if you want more than that, in order to de-risk that project, you need to have the infrastructure so that you can transport your product effectively away from your production site. Because like in Valencia here, if the refinery has if they have to shut down their production, Everfuel will also have to shut down their production, which is bad for business. But the infrastructure and an ability in the infrastructure to store hydrogen at a large scale in like large caverns will give the on a large scale the possibility to have an effective market with a lot of players to put in hydrogen production, also other players to take out for their purpose, like the steel industry in Germany. So that's the advantage of moving up to large scale, but you have a lot of different actors that have to chip in with their scope on the hydrogen value chain.
Exactly. So I guess we are greeting our politicians and our local TSO, and maybe we should invite them in the podcast and ask this question to them. Søren, one last question for you, because you know a lot about this space. Where do you actually learn, and where do you get knowledge, new knowledge about the sector coupling and the power tracks, and any recommendations of where you learn and where you can send that to other people?
I'm a little bit of a nerd, I guess. That's what my children they say, and some of my surroundings. But it's simply because it's a pure interest. So there's a lot of good front conferences and the stuff going around, not only in Denmark but in all Europe that I've attended to see what's going on. And it's quite clear for me that especially in Denmark, but also in Sweden, Finland, other places, Germany, that we're at the forefront of this development process. We have sector coupling being an integrated part of how you see this. Of course, you can find some information about what we do in the Triangle Energy Alliance in Fredericia. You can find it on our website. We also have our LinkedIn profile. You can follow us. But that's not like a deep technical insight you'll get there. I guess you'll have to hook up with all sorts of medias in the energy sector. But Denmark is a very good place to start, I'd say.
Okay. We will obviously link up to your website and to your LinkedIn profiles so people can see that in the podcast show notes. Both of you, thank you for joining here today. It's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks for inviting. Thank you for having us.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Energy Out Loud. Thank you for tuning in and joining our journey through the world of energy. Remember, your curiosity and engagement are what drive this conversation forward. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Follow us on social media to continue the dialogue and stay energized with the latest updates. Until next time, keep the energy flowing and stay charged for more enlightening discussions here on Energy Out Loud. Power off.